lots of comic book writers and artists talk about, and you even in the introduction to the McSweeney's book, you refer to how difficult this work is, the work of being a comic. What's so difficult about it?
Well, I realize now that maybe I shouldn't have said all that stuff because it just sounds like I'm whining, and basically all I have to do every day is just sit at a table and do whatever I feel like. So it's sort of unsightly and almost immoral to complain about it. But then again, there's sort of a general layman's misunderstanding that drawing comics is really easy and that I think a lot of people think anybody could do it. But it actually involves a lot of time, energy, research, and effort, which sometimes can take almost like a decade's worth of study before you can get to the point where you're communicating something that actually has some real emotional truth to it.
Research? How do you do research before you draw a comic?
Well, I guess to maybe use an example, if as a writer, I don't know how to say this without sounding, again, whiny. That seems to be my bent, but describing something in a story doesn't necessarily require always the amount of research that it might in a comic strip, i.e. if you draw a character walking into a room, you have to show basically everything, at least if you're drawing something relatively traditionally. Whereas in a story, you could get away with maybe a few carefully placed details without having to really study the way, say, a doorknob look or a door jam looked or carpeting, especially if you're doing something historical. It really can require a great deal of effort just to simply draw one single picture.
Can you explain or give me an example? Because I think most people would think, well, but you're drawing it. You can choose what details to put in and what not to put in.
Certainly. I mean, if you're doing something entirely fantastical, then sure, you can do whatever you want. That's up to your own imagination to put together things in your mind. But if you're doing something that's in any way, I mean, say if you're doing journalism or something like that with comics the way Joe Sacco does, he has to take copious notes and photographs just to get the details down of a particular experience he's trying to communicate. And even in terms of fiction, if I'm doing a story, say, about the 1950s or so, I have to know exactly how people dressed in certain years, what hairstyles look like, it's sort of like, on one hand, it's sort of like making a movie, and you don't have to pay for all of the props and sets and research that would require, but at the same time, you have to do it all yourself and learn how to draw it all.
Did you do any of that for Jimmy Corrigan?
Yeah, I actually did a lot of it for the 1890s segments, and I did a lot more research than ended up actually going into the book.
So what kind of research?
Just looking at photographs and seeing how people dressed and seeing how they stood and seemed to interact with each other, and especially with the Columbian Exposition. There's a depository of photographs of documentation of it actually being built at the public library here, and I spent a few days looking at all of those pictures, none of which, of course, actually made it into the the book itself. So, but it's just an excuse to get out of the house. So.
Didn't I read someplace that actually traveled to some small town in Wisconsin to also as part of research?
I actually did. That's embarrassing that you'd even know that, but I did. Yes. And I took a lot of reference photographs there and used a lot of the settings that were in that town for the part that happens in 1983 in Michigan, shouldn't be seen as anything against Wisconsin. It just happens to happen in Michigan. So Wisconsin was closer than Michigan for me to drive. So,
but you're right. I would guess that most readers of comics or graphic novels have no idea that the creator did any kind of research before they drew them. So what else is hard about that people might not know about creating graphic novels?
I think actually the hardest part of all, at least at the moment, is creating a character or creating a visual space into which the reader can both look and also empathize. It's very, very hard in comics to create a circumstance where you're looking down at a character and also feeling through that character. You're always sort of on the outside of comics, and I think the very first cartoonist to actually ever do that successfully, in fact, possibly even singularly, is Charles Schulz with Charlie Brown. I really believe that Charlie Brown is the only cartoon character that It was maybe the first sympathetic cartoon character, the one you really care about, the one you want to help, that you really feel sorry for and you want to make everything better for.
That's so interesting. I never thought about why that would be the case. What is it about the actual art or the drawing that might make you feel that way? Because, I mean, compare Peanuts or Charlie Brown to, I don't know, Dagwood. You don't feel sorry for Dagwood.
Not generally. No, I mean, somebody might, I guess, out there who's, you know, feels an affinity for somebody who sleeps on a couch all day or whatever, but even though that's not all that Dagwood does. But there's something about comics with looking down at a little boxes, little pictures of little people in little boxes that is perfectly suited to humor. It's a completely safe zone to be in as a reader. It's almost like sort of a divine perspective on little doings and activities of people that don't really know that you're watching them. So it's extremely well suited to telling jokes because you're always in a superior position as a reader. And the trick is to suck the reader in to such a degree that they don't even realize that they're necessarily feeling through the characters at the same time. And I found, at least at working on my own stuff, that sometimes showing faces so much just didn't seem to work so well because you have all these little eyes staring back at you, and after a while it starts to look kind of insane on the page, all these faces looking back at you. I found that frequently if the characters weren't looking, or sometimes we were looking completely away, there was more of a sense of empathy and experience with it. So it's weird, though. There's all these just sort of almost contradictions that start to happen when you start to do that. So I still haven't at all figured it out, and I don't know. I'm starting to worry that my brain is starting to calcify now, and I never will. So,
but you said something about the difference between looking and empathizing and how hard it is to get the reader to empathize.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do you do to try to create characters that readers will really empathize with? I mean, I guess you're talking about how do you create feeling with a comic?
Right. Well, that's about all I really care about, is to try to create genuine, real emotions. I don't want to create imitations of emotions or pictures of emotions or representations of emotions. I want to create the real emotion in the reader when the story is being read. And objectively, when you look at what comics entail, you have all the tools of practically all the arts right in front of you. You know, typography and color and composition and line, and in a way you almost have music if you pattern things properly. So you should be able to do it, but there's almost so much there, it's hard to figure out how to make it all work. So frequently, I seem to be heading more in towards, I started out more from a fine art background. I took only a very few literature and English classes when I was in college and got an art degree. But I think I'm heading more towards the literary end of it, though. It's hard to say.
Well, I'm just curious, because when you say that creating real emotions is what matters to you most, then I guess I would have thought that your work would be very text-driven, that would come from the story, wouldn't it? From the character you've created?
Well, not necessarily, because comics tell stories with pictures. There's different ways of telling a story in comics, and the most simple way is simply to illustrate text. Another way is simply to tell a story without text at all. You can actually tell an entire story using no words whatsoever and just simply showing what the action is, and if you do it properly and pay attention to the natural rhythms of life, you can actually create a real sense of place and movement and personality in a character without any words being printed on the page at all. And so I guess that's sort of what I aim at. I think most writers and artists aim at the same thing. I mean, the worst kind of writing is the kind that tells you how to feel or tells you what a character is feeling. The best kind of writing creates such an overwhelming sense of experience and reality that you're placed right there with the characters and you feel all of the things that they're feeling right along with them.
It's kind of show, don't tell.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that's the old adage, right? So
what were the feelings, the emotions you wanted people to have with Jim Corrigan?
Well, it's kind of hard to say, too, because then I start getting into, like, you know, am I turning into an aesthetic Nazi or something? Am I just, you know, here's what you should feel and feel nothing else? So then you get it more into the artistic end of it, where if you try to direct the reader's emotions or feelings too much, then you're just producing sentimental tripe. So in a lot of cases, I try to produce just something that just feels real enough so that it depends on... I mean, the best response that I can hear about something that I do is it's one person might think it was sad, another person might think it was funny.
But, have people said that about your work?
Yeah, sometimes. And that's when I usually feel like it's probably the most successful, because then that's when you finally reach the threshold of something taking on a life of its own, which I think should be the goal of any artist or writer, something that actually starts to have its own living presence to it.
I tend to think of Jimmy Corrigan as a pretty bleak story with a kind of angst-ridden sort of mood to the whole thing.
Sorry.
I've sort of half forgotten what I was going to ask. I'm sorry. There was a question coming out of
that. You were going to tell me I was a terrible writer.
No, I guess my question was, is that a mood you intended to create, or is that just that your mood, your kind of your own? Are you a melancholic sort of person?
Well, I don't know. I mean, not really. I mean, I guess I'm probably placing a little bit too much stress here on trying to create feelings and emotion. I mean, of course, that's what I want to do, but I wasn't really going for an overall mood in that at all. I was just trying to create a feeling of real life. And I guess if the overall impression is one of melancholia, then either I don't know whether it's a failure or not, but that's just maybe the way it seems or something. I mean, there's not a... I just didn't want it to feel false, mostly. I wanted it to feel like the way I experience life, with the same sort of rhythms and open spaces and large moments of nothing happening, because that's what life, at least my life, I guess, really is. I mean, of course, I'm not a parachutist or a sharpshooter or something like that, so maybe it's just not terribly interesting to read about or something, but...
Well, one of the things that's so fascinating about Jimmy Corrigan is how complex the story is, and how, you know, the narrative kind of jumps back and forth. I mean, there's Jimmy in the current time, this sort of middle-aged guy who's maybe going to look for his disappeared father. But then, you know, you're jumping back and forth between generations and more than a century, and there's 19th century Chicago, there are digressions on suburban houses. And did anybody ever say, you shouldn't put all this in a comic book?
Yeah, I think I told myself that probably about every 15 minutes when I was working on it, but a lot of it was just to stay interested. And if I have any little personal aesthetic philosophy, it's always to bite off more than I can chew, because I think that's what makes things most interesting. I kind of think of Citizen Kane that way. Like, that movie is so complicated and overwhelming, and it just becomes more and more and more, to the point where you almost can't hold it in your hand, in your mental hands anymore. And I wanted to, I always try to do that eventually with what I do. I guess it's really not a very wise choice to just keep grafting things together. It's sort of like making a big stew and just adding absolutely everything in the kitchen to it. But it's about the only way I know how to work, or to make something come out that seems to have at least some small taint of the complexity of reality around me or something, even though that sounds incredibly pretentious and I don't mean it to, but
Is this related in any way to the way you structure the page? Because that's the other thing that I think is maybe one of your own personal innovations, is you structure the page, the panels of the comic, not in a regular linear way. I mean, there are even little arrows that show you where to go. Your eye has to travel all around the page.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just an attempt to put as much information on the page as I can with the same level of concentration, again, and open spaces that I see in the world around me. And the arrows are simply there as a guide to the reader. Because we're trained essentially as Westerners to read left to right and then down and then left to right again. And sometimes in a comics it can get a little bit confusing, and sometimes you can get away with simply using the design of the page or the color or using a dialogue balloon to kind of help the eye along. But sometimes you need a little bit of extra help.
But why not just write it left to right?
Well, sometimes you can, but then when you want, say, if I want to make a picture larger to get, either create a better, a bigger sense of space or a more intense sense of emotional memory, then it can kind of start to mess up the overall flow of the page. But I think in a lot of ways, that's the way at least I organize information in my mind. It kind of, if I actually flattened it all out, I kind of think that's might what it might look like a little bit. So I don't know. It's clear I have no idea what I'm doing. I shouldn't even be on the radio. I'm sorry.
What about all the little tiny boxes? I don't think I've ever read a comic with so many little tiny boxes.
I don't know. I can't help it. It's just the, as I'm working, I'll think, oh, I shouldn't make sure I put this in. Well, there, I'll just subdivide this, and I just keep subdividing. And the way, I guess it's sort of, I mean, it's the way I think, too. I'll think about something, and then it'll carry me off into another tangent, and then that'll carry off into another tangent, and I don't know. I want it to kind of grow the way things naturally grow, too. So, but I guess it sort of starts to hit the upper limit of visual resolution or something like that. So I guess maybe I should concentrate on maybe not doing that. I don't know. It's a lot of it has to do with the rhythm of the story, too. Like, as I'm working on a strip, I'll read it hundreds and hundreds of times, and frequently the rhythm will sound wrong, so I have to add in more space or add in another beat, I guess. So it's sort of like splicing in an extra little bit, an extra little moment or something, so that the thing reads properly and sounds right in my mind when I'm reading it. So, and the only way to do that in comics is you're working with space and you're subdividing space. If I was just simply writing it as prose, it would just shove everything down below it, you know, another line. But in comics, it's locked into that space, so you have to kind of move things around. It's sort of a problem. You know, it's not like it just pushes the last panel onto the next page. It's still there, so.
You know, I was going to ask you whether the words or the text, were whether one was more important to you than the other, whether you considered yourself primarily an artist who, you know, happens to use some text to tell a story or the other way around. And it sounds like the two are just really inextricably linked for you. You have to use this form.
Yeah, it kind of is, I think. I don't know. I don't think that has anything to do with me. Originally, it just has to do with me becoming a cartoonist and getting locked into this weird way of telling stories. But I think any cartoonist who works alone and does their own work would have to say that words and pictures are equal. In fact, in comics, they become a completely different thing altogether. And that's at least a lot of the aim I try to do, is to try to put them on such an equal level as where you're actually reading pictures and looking at words, even in some cases. So
it's interesting because we all learn to read words. I mean, that's what we're taught in school, but I don't think we learn how to read pictures anywhere.
Yeah, well, we sort of do, though, too, at the same time. I mean, it's certainly in comics you are reading pictures. You're not really looking at them as drawings. You don't consider them as you would, say, a drawing of an object where every little detail and play of light is reproduced. Though, of course, not all drawings try to do that, but sometimes, at least, in fact, always, the more detail that's in a comic strip drawing, the more it slows down the reader and sometimes can take on a vulgar level. So there's a certain kind of weird fence you have to sit on with a level of detail so that it keys in enough to a reader's consciousness to try to call up what, say, the idea of a chair is and provide enough information to what that specific chair is without becoming so specific that it starts to look too much like a drawing and it slows down the reading of the pictures, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. How did you become a cartoonist?
I don't know. I wish I could find out so I could go back and be a real person. Yeah. I guess just, you know, like the way a lot of cartoonists do is just reading comics as a kid. I think my friend Seth said that basically he just grew up reading comics and was emotionally immature enough to suddenly wake up one day in his early 20s and realize he'd been tricked into becoming a cartoonist. So I think that's a lot of it. But at the same time, I truly believe that the potential for expression in comics, if you're willing to put in the effort that it requires, is actually extremely, extremely rewarding with the final result, even though it's, again, it does take a great deal of time.
You went to art school, right? Don't I remember reading somewhere that you went to art school, but you just kept drawing comics? And at some point, I mean, what did the art teachers say? That's not art?
Yeah, I got a lot of that. Strangely, more in graduate school than I did in undergraduate school, I guess, because in graduate school, it's like your last 2 years and you're really supposed to kind of buck up and get with the program. But even then, I think the climate has changed a great deal, even in the past 10 years or so, where comics are actually seen as a potential for genuine self-expression, and then they're not just seen as some sort of commercial gig, which I got accused of a few times in school.
What were your favorite comics when you were a kid?
Well, probably Peanuts, I would say. I mean, Peanuts, I've said this before, but Peanuts is, I've been reading Peanuts all my life. I mean, I read it as a kid and I read it as an adult, and I still feel the same way about all the characters. I can't think of anything else that I've carried from my childhood to now. And I also, I couldn't really say I read superhero, because I guess I did, but more than anything, I just tried to copy the pictures out of them and trace the pictures of the buxom women and try to, you know, remove their clothes with my pencil or something that's kind of pathetic, or, you know, try to imagine what I'd look like when I became all muscular, which of course I never did, so.
Did you start making comics of your own as a kid?
I did, but I didn't do it nearly as extensively as a lot of cartoonists, like the cartoonist Seth, who I mentioned earlier. He actually produced thousands of pages of superhero comics it's just staggering the amount of work that he did as a kid. I mean, he must have had no friends at all. I mean, I thought I was a lonely kid, but he must have never talked to anybody. But I tried to do a few, but I found it kind of frustrating, and it really wasn't until I was in my late teens that I really started to try to tell stories with comics.
Do you remember the first comic you ever did?
That's kind of hard to say. I don't know. I'm selectively remembering things. Mostly it was just like imitations of gag cartoons or something, and then trying to do my own superhero comics, and then some sort of nonsensical science fiction. Just all the crud that our brains get stuffed with in America that we have to kind of, you know, gradually work our way out of before we can... I mean, if you grow up just watching television the way I did, so.
So, I mean, when did you begin to cartoon in earnest?
I think when I was in college, I got a weekly strip on the paper there at the University of Texas at Austin called The Daily Texan. And that really, just having the weekly deadline really galvanized me into thinking, geez, I'd really better focus on this because people are actually going to be reading it. And I wanted to try to do something a little more serious, even though, of course, what I did was utter garbage and took me many years before I was able to do anything that I felt that had any emotional truth to it whatsoever. So, and then from there, I moved to Chicago and came to graduate school, and the editor of New City newspaper here, Brian Hegelke, gave me a space after Art Spiegelman recommended me to him, and I was with them for a number of years, and up until recently, I've been with the Chicago Reader for the last couple of years, many thanks to them. So, and that's just helped me basically get work done. So,
I think you wrote at the end, the afterword to Jimmy Corrigan, that Jimmy Corrigan actually began as a kind of unplanned, just improvisatory exercise.
Yeah, which is probably the sort of thing one really shouldn't admit, but I figure, you know, I just wanted to be honest about it. Yeah. It was, you know, every week you're trying to think of something that'll keep you interested. So that was the story I started, and I had no idea that it would mushroom. It's just bad writing, just letting it get completely out of control without any serious planning. It took me about 3 years into it before I finally figured out what I was doing and where the story was going to go.
And then how did you know when it ended?
I knew what was going to happen after halfway through it, and then from that point on, it was just a matter of figuring out how it was going to work. So, which I was not. The thing is about comics is that there's all sorts of things that become suggested to the cartoonist when you're sitting looking at the drawing board, even though that's an incredibly ungrammatical sentence, because you're drawing things out of your own memory and experience, and all these weird things start to suggest themselves. When you're looking into a room that you're drawing, that's sort of a melding of like your own childhood room or some room you were just in a week before, and weird associations and memories start to come up, and then you realize, sometimes I'll even realize like 6 months down the road that the character that I'm drawing is actually like a stand-in for somebody in my own memory, and I hadn't even realized that at that point. I'm sure that, I mean, obviously that happens to writers too, but when you have something in front of your eyes constantly sort of feeding back into your own memory and consciousness, I think it's something kind of strange about it. So,
did you ever sick of Jimmy and just feel like, oh God, yeah. I don't want to draw him again. I'm sick of him.
I was so happy when I finished that story. It was just, yeah, I never, yes, in short. So, and you draw a character, you know, you draw it literally thousands of times, and it changes all, you know, from week to week, and then you look back on it and you realize, like, you know, it just looks awful, and all you want to do is just stop and try to start over and not have those things happen to you again, but it's just part of the process.
Did he become, like a real person to you?
Yeah, he did. But that's part of the process. He became a real person for me about halfway through, but then towards the end, where I knew what was going to happen, he sort of became less and less so. But it's sort of embarrassing to talk about. I mean, of course, I felt sorry for him, and it was sort of like bidding him farewell or something. And those are the sort of things you don't really want to admit in public. So.
And does he ever pop up again? I mean, will you be in the shower or just, I don't know, fixing something for breakfast and there's Jimmy in your mind?
Strangely not. It's after a while characters cease to suggest what they want to do anymore to you. I don't know how to put it. It's not, I mean, it's almost like they just die in your mind, but all these other characters are in my mind now, so, and I think about things through them, but not through him, so.
So what's it like to look at your own book now? Or do you ever?
I don't really, unless I'm giving it to somebody or something, which I guess I shouldn't even do that, but mostly I'll just look at it and I'll see like all the mistakes or how the coloring is maybe not so good or how terribly it was drawn. I'll look at a page that I thought looked okay and then realize that it's really awful and wish I could fix it, but it's just too late, so just have to keep moving on, I guess, and try not to make the same mistakes twice, even though it's almost inevitable that you will, so.
We were talking some about the comics that you grew up with and then how you and other artists have really transformed contemporary comics. Are we just at the beginning, or are comics, you know, continuing to develop? Is this now, I don't know, a really realized art form?
No, I actually don't think it's realized at all. I do think it's still, I think this is going to sound both pessimistic and optimistic, but I think if you look overall at the history of comics, it was a real explosion of creativity and development of the language, say, from about 1890 to about 1930. And in 1930, with this sort of quick demise of them as a popular art form because of radio and especially film, they sort of just calcified. They just ceased to develop from that point on and adopted the more or less the language of cinema. And all the comics that were really popular or became popular at that time were self-consciously cinematic, like Terry and the Pirates, and even before that a little bit, the Wash Tubs and Easy, and then, of course, that led to superhero comics. And that sort of frozen language has sort of been thawed out, starting in the 1960s with Robert Crumb and Art Spiegelman and Kim Deitch. We're looking back at the comics of the 1920s and 1930s, and seeing where the real life of comics was, which was not really in this sort of illustrated text that they'd been for almost half a century, 30 years. And from that, then developed more even experimental work that was published by Art in Raw magazine. And I think then that influenced my generation. And I think there's more self-expressive, interesting comics being produced now than ever have been. And that sounds optimistic, and I think it is, actually. But I also think that as a form, they're developing. And in fact, I think you could honestly say they're a living language. I think it's quite provable that you could look at the comics of 10 years ago and the comics of today and see how it's developing its vocabulary and its potential for emotional expression. And I find that actually very, very encouraging. And I hope that it continues. But it's hard to say. I don't know.
So where's the pessimistic part? You said it would sound optimistic and pessimistic.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that part. I guess it didn't sound pessimistic? Oh, that's good. I guess, okay. Well,
it sounded like, so this is a developing art form that's has a long way to go still. I mean, it sounds exciting.
Right. Well, I left out the part about it being really hard and meaning that you probably don't have any friends and that you won't make a living doing it, but I don't want to throw that in there because I always say that, and it's probably, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, so.